I just said that very thing to the engine room. The electromagnetine motors are set on simmer as we do that rocket cruise through Saturday nights. Delighted to be with you this evening. John B. N. for the Saturday night soiree. Well, the following topics include kidnap and rescue, disaster management, homeland security, emergency preparedness, school shootings, practical defense training, all emanating from Brad Barker, president and founder of Halo Corporation, based in California. I can't wait. This is going to be a good one. Stand by. Steady as she goes. This is the mothership that is Coast to Coast AM. Brad Barker, who began his government service when his special operations team deployed in response to Hurricane Katrina in 2005, now leads a team of global experts in the fields of security, technology, and curriculum development for Homeland Security Studies. He's on the board of directors at the National Institute for Urban Search and Rescue and has spoken at numerous counterterrorism and security summits across the country. He's also a contributing author of National Security Threats in Cyberspace, From Gun Violence to Civic Health, and Contemporary Piracy, Consequences and Cures. Please welcome Brad Barker, host of the Discovery Channel's Kidnap and Rescue Program. Welcome, Brad.
Hey, John. Thanks so much for having me on tonight. I'm excited.
Well, last time you were on with George Knapp back in April of last year, and that's just too long given everything that's going on now. So anybody who missed that program, who did not become a Coast Insider, by the way, please bring us up to speed. Tell us about you and what led you to this work. It's been a pretty rollicking 8 years, I take it.
It's been crazy. You know, I have to say, this is not the type of career or ambition that one goes to school for or reads a book on or watches a how-to video. It's kind of a series of services that sort of found us. Myself and the folks at the Halo Corporation and Halo Enterprise at large are a bunch of folks who've dedicated their lives in military or federal service in some capacity, and they're now no longer in the government and are working in the private sector, trying to make things a little bit better for us, for our neighbors, our communities, our country, and help give people information and access to data so that they can prepare for whatever's next. It's kind of hard to anticipate what's around the corner, especially with you know, a lot of things that you discussed over the last hour in the leader to this interview. There's just a lot of crazy stuff, a lot of turbulence, and the outcomes are hardly certain, John.
Oh, well, that's for sure. Well, now tell us, do you come from a was your family military? I mean, what led you to this work?
Well, it was actually 2005, Hurricane Katrina. I'm in San Diego, and I've got a technology background that has an emphasis in what we refer to as communications interoperability, which is, you know, how you get different devices and gadgets to talk to each other. A lot of disparate networks try to talk, and you get that whole Tower of Babel thing, and we make sure that they all talk to each other.
get the walkie-talkies working with the phones.
You know, it's true. It's true. You got the Homeland Security can't talk to DOD, and the Department of Defense can't talk to the police. And in these types of disasters, you have to be able to communicate, or you won't be able to know what the right hand and left hand is doing. And we call that whole process the three C's. That's communication, coordination, and collaboration. And the first time in my life I got a chance to see how that works, or doesn't work, as the case may be, was right after Hurricane Katrina. And everybody sort of knows how that whole situation played out. And a lot of the folks that helped found the Halo Corporation come from a military or special operations background with a pretty high emphasis on Navy Special Warfare or Navy SEAL teams. And if you'll recall, about 80% of the first responders, including law enforcement and hospital personnel and ambulance folks, they bugged out with their families when Katrina and Ponsatrain ended up in everybody's living room. And
it,
you know,
seems like anybody with any sense who could.
Exactly. I'd probably pack up and grab the dog and look like the Beverly Hillbillies leaving. But that created a huge vacuum and a huge need for people that know a thing or two about austere environments. And there's nobody.
Where has he gone? I heard him go away. We lost him, but we'll get him back. Isn't it funny? Anytime that we have a controversial guest on who's going to talk to us about stuff that you're not going to get on the networks, you won't get it anywhere but somewhere on the internet or on this program, and you'll do a lot of looking. We start having these phone dropouts, and the little color wheel goes off on the Macs, and the PC-based ones start making the little dun noise, and sometimes the lines will drop. It's that communications interoperability thing. So anyway, I know we're going to get into Argo, because that was an extraction for sure, the hostages in Tehran. And I was thinking, after I saw the, first of all, the Academy Awards thing, I almost slept through half of it. It was just really kind of slow. I thought the new host was good. But anyway, that whole Argo thing, that was a joke that people in the late 50s and 60s used to think, oh, that was so funny. There was some sort of a joke that wound up with Argo. And of course, it was Argo, bleep yourself. And I thought, surely not. And sure enough, that's what it was. It was a nice little picture, but best picture of the year. I don't know. Anyway, do we have Brad back? Is he back?
Oh, yeah. I'm here. Okay.
Are we being interfered with by external forces?
I believe those are low-orbit geosynchronized satellites, not of our design.
I don't like it.
No, not one bit. I apologize for that, John. I don't know what happened there. I got hijacked.
No worries. We're here now. Carry on, sir.
So down at down in Katrina, we were there for several months, and one of the things that we learned when you're hanging out camping with a whole bunch of folks that do this regularly is there's a huge gap in what the government can do in big, big mass casualty events, large scale disasters. When it goes from critical incident to catastrophe to disaster, there's a very little people can do with that whole first response component. And one of the team members, one of our founding members who was from the Navy Special Warfare Command, leaned over to me and said, "What we do for citizens of other countries is dramatically more capable than what we do for our own citizens in situations like that." And we let that touch us, and we built a construct called the Halo Corporation, which is a bunch of these folks that are very good at operating in austere environments, have tier one first world medical capability in mobile platforms, and can really go to really bad neighborhoods and stabilize people until we can get them real help or until real help arrives. And that's really the whole overarching theme of what Halo does, is giving people the information so that they can prepare and then being able to respond when they need help.
Now, how do you stabilize a community that's been hit with a wet A-bomb?
That's exactly right. The first thing that has to happen is you've got to get the terrestrial forms of communication back up. You've got to allow people to be able to talk to each other, and first responders, regardless of their layer of government or what their role or responsibility is or their level of authority, they've got to know where their people are and where their stuff is. And that's not any different than our families. If something happens to our neighborhood, we have to know where our family is, our people, and we have to know where our stuff is. Where's our water? Where's our food? How can we get shelter? I mean, that whole hierarchy of need comes into play. And we live in a time, John, when that doesn't really remain top of mind. We know we can go down to 7-Eleven and get a bag of chips and a Coke, and we'll be good until dinner. And sure. And we really don't live past, we really don't prepare past 4 or 5 hours. That's where we are here in America.
Well, that's true.
I'm sorry?
Oh, yeah, I say that's true. I've just recommended to my friends and occasionally over the air that at least keep half a tank of gas in your car in case you need to go to the hospital or get out of town in the middle of the night, because these things happen and nobody does it, really.
It's true. When your gas gauge gets to half, consider it empty, because you don't know when you're going to have to go on a long trip and you're not going to prepare. You're not going to be prepared. I'm unfortunately old enough to remember the 70s when the gas crisis was in full bore, and you could only get gas if you had an even or an odd number license plate. These types of things, I know some folks are saying, well, not here, not now, not us. But those in Southern California on September 8th of 2012 will remember that we were down hard for over 30 hours here in San Diego County, when San Onofre, I think Homer Simpson must have kicked the plug out of the the power plant there, because down we went. And it doesn't take long for the shelves to clear at the local grocery and for people to, you know, start to freak out. And cell phones didn't work. Obviously, landlines didn't work. It was a dark blackout for the entire county and down into Mexico, east into Arizona. And we were on a boil water mandate even after 12 hours. So if your refrigerator doesn't work and your food starts to spoil, then you're going to have some toxic elements growing in your fridge that's trying to kill you. And if you are getting a boil water mandate, you've got cryptosporidium and giardia and other toxic microbes that are going to make you sick that we're not ready for. And if you don't have your tap water and if you don't have your fridge, people start to, you know, the blackout party's over. You know, it's not fun and interesting anymore. And people start to get concerned. Now, in a city like San Diego, where we have Camp Pendleton, we've got Navy Special Warfare Command at Coronado, we've got Top Gun at Miramar, we've got a lot of capable people around. So if a city is going to go down like San Diego, a lot of the folks that live and support that whole military group there, they're okay. But people did start to lose it, and you could feel it. You could feel the tension. So we sort of teeter on a knife blade, because you start taking water away from people, they get a little funny. And when that tension grows to fear, it gets tough to manage. And I just want to underscore that when the power goes out, like this blackout that occurred in San Diego or the blackout that occurred on the East Coast on 4th of July of 2012, the 911 response team or the 911 response time for law enforcement in San Diego was 5.5 hours. So when you look at like a Katrina element, which is what really was the genesis of Halo, all the way to just last year when we had this blackout, thankfully there wasn't a lot of violent crime that occurred. There was some isolated looting incidents because, you know, people were taking advantage of the situation. But this was only after, you know, a day, John. Imagine what happens when that blackout goes to 2 days, 3 days, and you're taking people's food away, you're taking people's water away. It starts to get real dicey real fast.
Let me ask you something, Brad, just a short side trip. You know, we keep complaining about the We hear the mainstream media parrot this phrase "nanny state."
Yeah.
Is there a perception, in your opinion, that we have become as the civilian populace, not the first responders, not the military, just the regular civvies, so sofa softened that we're helpless and we can't take care of ourselves? All of that stuff that was like the post-World War II generation about join the Boy Scouts and, you know, learn how to get food, set a trap, make a fire with no matches, take care of yourself, keep yourself sick, spot ticks, spot skin problems, allergies, this and that, be prepared. The motto is be prepared. It's like, effectively, I think what you just said is nobody's prepared. So do you think this is perceived by our authorities, and they're going, the civilians are completely helpless. They can't handle any of this. So we're going to have to prepare ourselves to use whatever force is necessary to, as you said, stabilize them. I think you were talking about infrastructure, like communication, but I'm thinking behavior.
Behavior is the key. You nailed it. You know, it's so good that you said that. So nanny state, are we a nanny state? That's not a term I use, but I totally get it. I think we've graduated from nanny state. That's kind of a coping mechanism, but we're talking about semantics here. I think we have a preparedness atrophy. We haven't had to prepare for so long that we just don't have we just don't have the response muscle. We don't have the situational awareness. We are a patient that doesn't know it's sick. So why would we go seek the wise counsel of experts when we're doing fine, man? Nobody goes to the doctor when they're feeling great. They go to the specialist after they've been told they've got a period of time to live, and then
right.
It's too late.
You know, somebody asks you, how are you? And your only response can be, well, I feel fine.
Right.
You never really know how you are.
We lack the metrics to measure how well we're doing. And I would challenge you or your listeners, you know, suppose you did have a 3-day blackout and your grocery store was closed. You couldn't get gas. America has an average of 4 days of food in their fridge. 4 days. Okay, now a lot of that stuff's in your freezer. Okay, that's not going to last after a day. What do you do?
Go to the MREs, I guess.
Would you have MREs?
I don't like them personally, but I think we got some laying around somewhere.
Meals refusing to exit? I wouldn't like them either. But, I mean, you're kind of different, John. Because of what you do for a living, I think Mr. Hoagland mentioned that you're surrounded by conspiracy. You're also surrounded by some folks that remind you and keep this top of mind for you. So I'll bet you got some water at home, but I don't think you got 50 gallons of potable water. I don't think you've got cases of MREs. I don't think you have the means to keep your doors locked and people away from your doors when they run out of their stuff and their family starving and they know you have stuff and they want it. I don't know how fortified you are, if you get my implication. So, and you're one of the people that has access to data. You're surrounded by this stuff. So most
we like to think of ourselves as analysts rather than conspiracy theorists, you know?
Sure. So if you think about just count on your fingers, food, water, shelter, you won't have any power or energy in your house. Sewer becomes an issue. Humans, you put a bunch of folks together, look at anything from Woodstock to Katrina to Live Aid to the last camping trip you went to that was too crowded. I mean, humans banded together are pretty filthy after a while.
And people will lose their minds if they just run short on tissue, shall we say.
It's true. I mean, if they don't have their brand of puffs with aloe that's quilted, they're going to complain. And you know, then there's always the underlying issue of security. You know, you deny people these things and you have large men with large stature that are going to be able to get things from smaller men with smaller stature. And those smaller men will get a friend to take down the big guy. And small people will form groups. Those groups will form into communities. And those communities are going to band together and they're going to be like roving gangs because water is going to become a currency. It's going to become something that is going to keep you alive. And we're just not used to that here. So some people might be thinking, is this guy being an alarmist? I would challenge you and challenge your listeners. How prepared are they? Be prepared, which is the moniker you mentioned from the Boy Scouts earlier, post-World War II. But are you? Is your neighbor? In this day and age, I don't know my neighbor well enough to borrow his lawnmower. Okay, years ago, we knew when I was growing up, we knew everybody on our block. We knew who was on vacation and who wasn't. We were long past the days of do we keep our cars and our front doors unlocked. It's a much deeper, much larger risk and a much greater vulnerability. And the biggest vulnerability that exists right now is our ignorance of these threats that are natural or man-made.
How long did the people, the majority of the people during the Katrina incident, how long did they have to go without primitive services?
Well, I think that there's folks living in Louisiana that would argue that they are still suffering from not having the proper care that they were promised. But if we have a phrase that we use when you're talking about any of these disasters, and we've worked, a dozen or so of the big ones, Katrina, of course, Haiti, Banda Aceh, Phuket, mudslides in Peru, Chile, and it's always the same movie. You've got a whole lot of folks trying to solve the problem, but there's no coordination from the host nation to the NGOs to the faith-based community that shows up. You know, there's all these folks kind of bustling around trying to – there's no absence of people, money, or care. It's just there's no coordination.
Gotcha. We're going to have to take our break right now. I'm sorry. I hate to cut you off because you have large thoughts, and I want to hear them all, but we'll be right back with Brad Barker. He's a host of the Discovery Channel's Kidnap and Rescue Program and president of Halo Corporation. This is Coast to Coast AM. I wonder what Brad Barker, our guest tonight, has to say about the possibility of a nuclear Katrina of sorts. You know, you hear so much stuff all the time, all the signs, all the lights, all the adverts, all the news feeds, all the sound bites, all the little snippets of data. Half of it's rubbish and half of it is legitimate, and which is which sometimes. You know, you think you know, but you don't. I mean, we think we know what we just heard. We think we know what we're saying. Sometimes we don't. So when we come back with Brad Barker, I want to ask him to define what is a security threat. What does that mean? Security threat. Threat to our security. What? Individually? Collectively? Collectively, eventually? But not right now. Remember, everybody, these disasters very seldom hit everybody at one time. A tornado in Joplin, Missouri. A Katrina hurricane in New Orleans. A blackout on the East Coast. A blackout on the West Coast. But it's not happening all at once. This is why, and we know this, so this is why I believe we do not prepare, because as Frank Zappa once sang on an old Mothers of Invention song, it can't happen here. Well, yes, it can, and the odds compel that it will, I would submit to you. We shall return shortly with Brad Barker on Coast to Coast AM. So, Brad, is that too simplistic of a question? What actually constitutes a security threat? What does that mean? Everybody at one time, or just...
Of course, that's not too simplistic. You can't develop a solution for something that you know little or nothing about. And the first step of learning about something is defining it. So over here at HALO, we define security into two categories. You've got threat, which is some type of vulnerability to life and limb, something that can actually hurt you physically. That is a threat that's going to hurt you or someone you care about. And then you have risk, which is the potentiality of something that is going to happen that usually hits your property or your money or your economics. And we kind of define it in those ways because that's sort of had to comply to how the government defines things and how we can get funded to do some of the things that we do. So we sort of have to play ball with the way the bureaucracy plays. So how it translates to the folks that live in our neighborhoods, they need to understand the general risk and vulnerability that exists around them at all times. And like you mentioned before the break, a hurricane or a tornado, they're not going to come on time, and it's not going to happen here, as Zappa and the Mothers said. And if it does happen here, then I'm moving to Montana, if I'm just a sub-reference one more time to Zappa. A lot of the risk and threat that could possibly happen to you, people like to put in a box because they believe they can defend themselves or that they are adequately prepared. It goes back to the patient doesn't know it's sick, so it doesn't go see the doctor. But where you'll see people move off X and actually engage is when they perceive a risk to someone they care about, a spouse, their children, or if we're talking about a risk, their property. And it goes back to what I said earlier in the beginning. People are really motivated and concerned about their people and their stuff. And if we just look at those two little blocks and break those down, what could happen to my people, my employees, the people who report to me, the people I'm responsible for, my spouse, my children? What could possibly happen to them on any given day? And it runs the entire gamut. Is it a tidal wave if you're living on a coastal community? Is it an earthquake or if you're a seismically active area? You talked about a nuclear Katrina earlier. or a cyber Pearl Harbor or a cyber 9/11. And then there's the predators out there. There are the people that will prey on the young and the perceived weak. And when you look at a man-made threat, you have to look at how bad people do bad things and how they go through the process of target selection. And we look at the three V's: how visible is something, how valuable is something, and how vulnerable is something. Because bad guys will make a move on you or someone you care about based on the outcome that they expect and the reduction or how much they can control their risk of being perceived or being identified or interdicted or apprehended. So sure. Security is a huge, huge term, huge. And how we as security responders. It runs the gamut from our local law enforcement, our state law enforcement, our federal law enforcement, our military, our intelligence community, the security guards at the mall, all the way up to, you know, special operations folks that work in a building with no address along the D.C. Beltway. So it's a huge, huge, huge industry. There's hundreds of thousands of people operating globally within that security construct. And unfortunately, because they're so clandestine and have such different missions, they don't talk to each other or share information. And in that gap is the threat. And that's what companies like Halo do, is we fill that gap that just won't be filled.
Okay, gotcha. All right, now, Halo in the old days to me meant high altitude, low opening, but it does not mean that now, where your corporation is concerned. It's Humanitarian Assistance Logistics Corporation. It really kind of says it all.
It's true. It actually still means high altitude, low opening to us. We have a triple entendre going on. It is Humanitarian Assistance Logistics Operations, because that's more or less what we do. Also, metaphorically, a halo obviously has the implication of good, because we're out there doing good work. And a halo also signifies a perimeter of security within which you are not vulnerable. So we play around a lot. We have some time on our hands from time to time, and our days are, 50 minutes of boredom with 10 minutes of sheer terror, and we get to come up with funny little metaphors like that.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, since we're making these musical references, which are so excellent sometimes, that move into Montana thing, going to be a dental floss tycoon, I remember.
Yes, I've got my Zircon Entrusted Tweezers right here, but I reference again.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got a long way to go and a short time to get there, you know, and this first hour is zooming by, so let's get into it. What are, in your opinion, some of the biggest security issues facing our country today? Because everybody is like, why do we need all these drones? Why are the security services so jacked up? I mean, it seems like there are threats out there, I'm sure there are, of which we are completely unaware.
Sure. So we have a concept that we refer to as the threat matrix. And we talk about this. We've got a newsletter that we push out every month called The Harbinger. And people can jump onto our website if they want to hear more about this in detail. Because as you said, we have a short period of time and you can't get into the granularity that we need people to understand so that a lot of the things that you and I are covering make sense. You know, we're trying to find the first toehold. Because it's not just folks from a special operations background that do this for a living. All the stuff that we're talking about matters to, you know, parents and soccer moms and school teachers and your neighbor, and you know, the dog catcher. I mean, it matters to everybody. We all have a role to play here. So, the Harbinger magazine, we push that out to anybody who wants it. It's free, and people can get it by going on to thehalocorp.com and signing up for that. There's an article that we just finished called 3 Days to Animal, and it goes back to some of the things that we saw in Haiti and some of the things that we saw in Katrina. When you deny people water for 3 days, they go through a series of disconnect and disassociative cognitive function, where they start to get early onset dementia and stop behaving like humans. They start behaving more like animals. And in that process, man's law no longer applies. You can't reason with someone who isn't reasonable. And we see this happening at every one of these mass casualty events that we've had to respond to. So when I talk about water in a situation like that that's massive, it also applies here at home. If you have one of these blackout situations, you do need to prepare. There's a resource out there that I would direct your listeners to by an author named Sam Sheridan, who's a guy that I don't know, but I'm a fan of his. I got a bit of a man crush on the guy because he's written some books that are just right. The content in his books are, I mean, the guy has it right. Now I'm a UFC fan. You know, I've been into martial arts my whole life, and of course, UFC is the big deal. And he wrote a book called A Fighter's Heart, And he talks about what it's like to be in high stress situations and you have to do something. And his analogy is how he behaves in the octagon or how he behaves in the ring. But he looks at what happens in the human condition and in the sympathetic nervous system and how we respond to threat, the cortisol dump, the adrenaline dump, dopamine. And this is going to happen to you or me if we're not in the octagon. I mean, if you get into a near-miss car accident, you jam on the brakes and you almost go off the cliff, you're going to get that adrenaline dump that just, whoa, because you just missed one. But when you get into something where you truly have to engage and your body starts to function in a way that is really coming from your mammalian brain, where all of the fight or flight comes into play, your auditory exclusion comes into play, tunnel vision comes into play, and you're going to do one of two things. You're going to engage and defend yourself and fight this threat or this opponent, or you're going to bail. You're going to run. And this, what he breaks down, Sam Sheridan, in his book, Fighter's Heart, is something that translates all the way through. And we've been using some of those analogies in a lot of the classes that we teach to local, state, and law enforcement, the military, and also, you know, the general public. And he's done something for us. He's come out with another book called The Disaster Diaries, and he beat us to the punch. He starts to apply that kind of stuff to Katrina-like events, Haiti-like events, where people will behave in communities a lot like an individual will in fight or flight. And it's amazing how he's done the research. Now, he's not a scientist or an engineer. He's a fighter. But what he's done is he's been a facilitator, and he's used a little bit of his celebrity to go out into the world and find the best and brightest minds and pick their brains and come up with doctrine on how you can, even in the most stressful situations, still be able to perform and protect yourself first, because if you're wounded, you can't protect your family. And it's just he spoon feeds it to people in ways that we really like. I don't know if you know who Joe Rogan is. Do you know this guy? Does that name ring a bell to you?
It does not at this moment, but apparently I know things that I'd forget that I know until you mention them.
Well, he used to be the host of a show called Fear Factor, which for me was a reality show where it was
I know who
survivor.
He is.
But he puts worms and maggots in people's mouths and then like makes them dangle from helicopters and stuff. It's a funny show, but he's the host of the Ultimate Fighting Championships. He's the commentator. Well, he's also a stand-up comedian, and he's another guy that's used his celebrity to create a podcast that talks about a lot of the things that you guys talk about on Coast to Coast, and you can just kind of download it and listen to it on iTunes and Twitter or Stitcher and YouTube. And he's another guy who doesn't have a law enforcement or military background. I mean, he has no reason really to be talking about domestic preparedness or public safety or emergency response or humanitarian aid. He's just interested in it, and now that he's a millionaire, he can now do what it is he wants to do. And if you can understand that he's a stand-up comic that is a rated R kind of guy, and you might need to put the earmuffs on, you know, there's an F-bomb or three every other paragraph. But I mean, he uses his celebrity and his comedic style to deliver as a delivery system to get the information that you and I are talking about out to people. So my point in mentioning both Sam Sheridan and Joe Rogan is here's a couple of guys that are using their reach and their access to get important information to people that otherwise wouldn't have access to it. Because there isn't a delivery system, in my view, that is offered to us by our government, the ones that we think should be taking care of this stuff, out to the people that need it most, and those are the people in the communities. Because if it affects one person, it's going to affect their family. If it affects their family, it's going to affect our neighborhood. If our whole neighborhood is affected, you know, and it just starts to spiral from there. So these are some free resources that are out there. You can download these things. You can listen to these podcasts. And it's working. We've cherry-picked a lot of these ideas. We've started our own podcast to deliver a lot of this free information out there. We're calling it the Halo Cast because we couldn't come up with a more creative name.
Kind of cool.
It's a way to get some of the best and brightest minds from, you know, not just not just emergency medics that have been there, done that, and got the T-shirt and seen the worst afflictions that can happen to people and can give tips and tricks on how a family can survive, you know, for 3 or 4 days. When you do get into that 3 days to animal type of mentality in your neighborhood and your neighbors are knocking on your door because they know you have a generator, they know you have food, their family is sick and dying, and they are going to stop at nothing to come into your house and get your stuff. And this is not an unrealistic scenario because
you've seen this
everywhere. And it's the same movie over and over again. And we've seen it in Haiti, arguably the most destitute, dirt poor country in our hemisphere, that's 90 minutes away from Fort Lauderdale, which has the highest concentration of mega yachts in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I just, you know, that dichotomy is overwhelming.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
And you know, it's having access to this information so that you can feed yourself and then come up with a plan that's specific to you is really where the game begins. Because once you have a foundation, you can start building skill sets and curriculum for your family and your neighbors, and you can drill it. It all comes down to training. You instill confidence and knowledge to people through training. And we have an entire training and education division at HALO where we develop exercises and curriculum and workshops, not just for law enforcement and first responders and medical personnel and the military. We also deliver this training to civilians because when you go to a Katrina or a type of environment, it's the civilians that can't take care of themselves. And I believe that if you can empower the civilians, even at the most micro level, to sustain themselves for just a few more days, let the first responders go to the next house that needs some attention. And if we can germinate and that doctrine can proliferate, then communities are going to be more resilient. They're going to be more self-sustaining, and we won't fall down as much as we do when this kind of stuff happens. I mean, there's just no real inherent confidence in the systems that exist right now. I mean, FEMA has become a punchline. So when you live in California, a pretty affluent community here, and the whole place is on fire, which happens about every 4 years, everyone buckles down and waits for the government to come save them. And I got to tell you and your listeners, the government's not coming.
They're not. Yes, I've said it many times. If you rely on the government to save you, you're going to die.
Yeah. So, and the resources are out there for you to empower yourself, and they're free. This is not a whole bunch of information that is reserved for the uber rich, the overinsured, or some person who's reached some level of hierarchy within their company. This is free. And people have an obligation to let this information touch them, see what applies to them, and then use it. Because if you don't, then it's kind of your fault, isn't it? Because it didn't cost you anything. And guys like you and George and Art, and you're screaming from the rooftops about this stuff. And people need to hear you and listen and realize that you're right.
All right, I'll tell you what. Let's take our break so we can do news and stuff like that. We've got a couple hours to go. So when we come back, let's recapitulate and just remind everybody where they may find these free resources. Because a lot of people think they're going to have to take off work. They can't do that. They're busy. It's like nothing's hitting the fan now. It's a nice day. It's fine. I'm not doing it. And a day turns into a week, and a week a month, and then turns into a year. And then, oh dear, the blades are bending up. It's hitting it so hard. The poor fan. All right, we'll be back in just a minute with Brad Barker. It's very nice to be in with you tonight. TheHaloCorp.com. TheHaloCorp.com. That's where you'll find the beginning of the beginning, if you haven't begun already. This is Coast to Coast AM.